This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
This topic that we are sharing on is reentry. It's the last stage. Is that better? Okay, thank you. So this is the last stage in the sort of the missionary experience. But before we jump in, I'm curious to know how many of you have served on the field in a cross-cultural way for, let's say, more than 6 months? Can I see a raise of hands? Oh, wow, lots of you. Great. So welcome. So the reentry experience is something that is often misunderstood and often comes as a surprise for those people who experience it. And a lot of missionaries, a lot of returning missionaries come back disillusioned by their experience, both sometimes on the field, but oftentimes by the reentry experience, and struggle to really gain a footing in their communities and in their churches and families again. And oftentimes they don't understand what's going on, and their family and church family don't understand what's going on. And they just struggle and struggle and don't know how to get past their experiences. And so this is sort of an introduction to all of that. And the reentry experience is not unique to just missionaries. It's actually, in my college research, it's actually the same whether a family goes overseas for, you know, military reasons or as a ambassador or education or, you know, humanitarian, whatever the reason to go over, those families also experience exactly the same things you experience, both in going and being there, but also in coming back. So you're not unique, you're not weird, you're not unspiritual, you're normal. I declare you normal. So, yeah, this is part of that normal journey that is unknown to a lot of people. And the severity of the reentry experience is often exacerbated by how long you've been there, how much you've adapted to the culture, and how different the host culture was from your home culture. So if you went to Canada and you came back, maybe not so much. But if you went to Niger or something and lived there for 10 years, yeah, you're going to really feel it. So my wife is going to, just as far as the introduction, we're going to introduce you to sort of the missionary journey just to get all on the same page. And then we're going to talk about preparing to return, sort of that splashdown period, and then processing your experience and then getting back to returning to purpose or getting back to healthy. So my wife's going to take us through. We're just going to sort of co-lead here. She's going to take us through the journey, what's normal for missionaries.
Okay. How many of you have seen the transition bridge or are familiar with the transition bridge? Wow. Okay. So this is the start of maybe making some sense out of your experiences. So everybody that moves overseas and comes back crosses the transition bridge. And if you're a family and you have children, your children go across it. Most of you probably expected things to be different when you headed overseas, but maybe you thought when you were coming back that you were coming back home and things would be easier or normal. But the truth is, the bridge is both directions every single time. You don't get from here to there without crossing this bridge. So the normal, let's say the left side here is America, where you're living. And as you decide you're going to pack up and go overseas, you start heading onto this bridge. So there's that settled place when you're in your home country and you're comfortable. As you decide you're leaving, you start into this unsettled stage. You start heading off on the bridge. You have preparations and lots of decisions. When you get to about a little bit before, like, leaving, it's pure chaos and everything's just upheaval. You're not really sure what's happening anymore, and emotions are extremely highs and lows and everything. And then as you enter into your country you're going to, you stay in chaos. You are still, you hit the ground, and it's like, wow, how, where are we going? How's this going to work? As you're there longer, you start entering into a resettling. And slowly there's, you know, new beginnings and exploration and adapting. And eventually, if you're there long enough, you get to a new normal and a new settled. So that's the transition bridge. But guess what? When you come home, or for if you're a missionary, America's not even really home. But when you come back to the U.S., you have to go across the bridge and go through every step again. And when you get back to America, it is not just like, boom, we're home and it's settled. You go through all the same processes of resettling again. So what we found in our debriefing experience, our own experience, the expectation going seemed like we were expecting this to happen, but coming home is where people get tripped up, and that's why we wanted to talk about this today. So I needed to explain that bridge just so that that's sort of the beginning of understanding the reentry process. You've crossed the bridge, you're back across the bridge, and when you hit the U.S. soil, you're somewhere in chaos when you're starting your reentry process. One thing that happens before, kind of it's the first step of reentry, is good goodbyes. So this happens obviously before you're leaving, and you need to start saying goodbye to everything and everyone. What emotions do you experience when you think about saying goodbye? Just call them out. When you think about saying goodbye, what comes? What emotion comes to your memory, your mind?
Sadness.
Overwhelming sadness. Maybe dread.
Anticipate loneliness.
Anticipate loneliness, yes.
Some sense of closure.
Mm-hmm. Sense of closure. How many of you love saying goodbye? It's your favorite thing to do. No one? I don't either, and in fact, I was, when we first took our, I had, you know, lived overseas for a short amount of time, moved from, I grew up in Indiana, moved to Colorado, Africa, Colorado here, I've said a lot of goodbyes and still say goodbye to my family all the time because I live away from them, and my goodbye experience up until we went through our training was, I'm not saying goodbye, we're just going to leave and see you next time and boom, out the door. And I just hated goodbyes because they are hard and they're painful. And as I learned about the importance of a healthy goodbye so you can have a healthy hello, it has transformed saying goodbye. It has been so helpful with our children and in saying goodbye. So there's three realities that we face when we say goodbye. One of them is the suffering. It just hurts, and you can't get around that or away from it. C.S. Lewis said, why love if losing hurts so bad? He said twice in his life he made the choice to say goodbye, once when he was a boy and once as a man. And he said, the boy chose safety, but the man chose suffering. Because he had learned that it's worth loving, it's worth the pain, and the happiness that you have then is worth saying goodbye later and the pain that goes with it. The second thing that goes along with goodbyes is that a healthy goodbye is actually a way of giving a blessing to the people that you're leaving. Actually, goodbye meant God be with you in the original connotation. And so when you give a healthy goodbye, you actually acknowledge the other person's value and the way that they have blessed your life. And then thirdly, a healthy goodbye allows you to have good hellos. And as an illustration, so when you go somewhere, You know, I'm kind of an all-in kind of person. So when you go somewhere, you give your heart to the people that you go to be with. But a good goodbye, you have to actually take your heart back and go to the next place. If you don't, you know what happens. Your heart is left hanging there, and your heart is left hanging there. And you have this just, yeah, there's not closure. Your heart is just in all these different places. So sometimes it might feel a little, I don't know what the right word is, to take your heart back and sort of maybe hard or something, but emotionally you have to sort of do that to take your heart back to move on to the next place. There are just a few things to remember when you have good goodbyes, to have good closure. You will want to, if you think about the word raft, you have reconciliation, affirmation, farewell, and then thinking ahead. I don't know if I have a... There we have it. So if there's anything left to be unsettled between you and someone, you want to make reconciliation. In saying a good goodbye, you affirm the people that you're saying goodbye to. You say farewell, and that equips you to think ahead to the next place you're going, the next thing you're heading into. Think about goodbyes as an event or a process and not just a once-and-done thing, especially if you have children and you're saying goodbye. It is so important for you to let your children say goodbye to even, like, places and things, their pets, the things they love. Take them around to different places that are special to them and have them say goodbye, you know, whatever it is. That really helps children have closure to move on to the next step. Choose a good setting for your goodbyes. Don't do like I did for so many years at the door, like, goodbye, I'm going to see you later, and just boom, you know, take some time in a nice setting. The airport is not the place to say your good and final goodbye. As you say goodbye, maybe acknowledge what you're going to miss about the people or the place and allow yourself to grieve that. And don't be embarrassed with sadness. Tears are a part of goodbyes, and it's okay. And it means you've loved well, and it's going to hurt. I think that's
all right, yeah. Good goodbyes are critically important to your emotional health, being able to bring that closure. People who are just ripped out of their place of ministry and work in their lives often feel that, like, that uncompleted part in their heart that just lingers. The other aspect is unmet expectations. And in my research, this is probably the number one. Relationships or poor relationships are often, you know, the reason people come home. But unmet expectations are probably the key as we look across all expats of the reason people really have emotional trauma. So they, and it's normal, it's part of the human experience to really think about what life is going to be like. So before you go, you're imagining what life's going to be like on the field, what it's, you know, the weather's going to be like, what it's going to be like to live maybe in a city or in a tropical climate or by the ocean or wherever you find yourself, you know, what it's going to be like to be with your other teammates on the field. And we have all these preconceived ideas, and some of us are better at imagining what life's going to be like maybe than others. But we create these expectations for ourselves, how much work we're going to get done, and how quickly we can adjust to our new culture and such. So that's a normal part of it. And oftentimes the unraveling of unmet expectations starts happening on the field already with what we expect from our board or from our family and all those sorts of things. But coming back, we start imagining what life is going to be like to come home, to meet our family and friends, and to have all these experiences that we're looking forward to. And in a sense, when we leave, life freezes in our memory. The people stay the same age, the relationships stay the same. Everything just sort of freezes. And when we think about coming back, we think about coming back to our memory. But the truth is, we've changed and they've changed and life has changed and things have gone on. And oftentimes our our expectations are either ungrounded or unrealistic, or, you know, but we have them and we really own them because this is how we expect life to be. And when we get home, so another aspect that really impacts us deeply is this thing of ethnocentric, and it's the belief that thinking your own culture is better than another. And culture and our beliefs and values and such is really who we are at the core. It affects our behavior and what we do and how we value time and relationships and things. And as we're going along and we go to another culture, we are forced to come to terms with our culture. Oftentimes we don't even think about culture till we confront another culture. And all of a sudden we have these other beliefs and these other value systems and other ways of doing things that we realize, hey, you know what? Our way isn't the only way. There's other ways that work for people. And then sometimes, depending on our personality or our preferences, we actually value other things in their culture more than our own. And you're like, wow, I love this thing of relationships being more important than time and being able to complete what, you know, a conversation with a friend before you have to rush off to an appointment. Where in the West, we're so time-bound that we'll cut off someone to get to our appointment. And so we value those things, and we're impacted at our very core, at who we are. But we don't realize those changes because we can't see them. But when we get home and we have these expectations of how life will be, and we get home and suddenly we realize that the people that we expected to be a certain way aren't, and it's like shocking, and sometimes we want to judge them for the value systems that they have, or we feel isolated and we want to reject, in a sense, our own culture that we came from, because now we see it differently because of the changes that we've had internally. And it can lead us to sort of an isolating sort of self-reflecting type experience where we get home, we say hello, and then we realize the differences, and other people realize the differences and are sort of like, whoa, this guy's like weird all of a sudden. He's like not like us anymore. And they say welcome home, and then it quickly, they go on with their lives, and you're left feeling alone and isolated. And if you can't get past that, it will drag on and impact your ability to be able to minister and reach out to other people because you're so isolated in your own thing. So unmet expectations are incredibly powerful and can be very damaging to us. So we're going to go through a little exercise here. So it's not just unmet expectations that impact us, but our whole life on the field and good, maybe poor goodbyes and all those things really impact us. So we want to talk about the stressors and emotions of reentry. So we come home with all this, these experiences that other people can't relate to, and then we have this isolated experience in the reentry process. So for those of you who have been on the field especially, I just want you to think of what word would you use to describe the feelings and emotions around reentry? So you get back. What are the feelings and words that you've experienced? So it might be a positive emotion. It might be a negative, you know, emotion. Whatever it is, what are the words that you use to describe your emotions and experience?
Or challenges.
Or challenges.
Yeah.
Just call them out and we'll write them down.
Uncertainty.
Good.
Grief and loss.
Grief and loss.
Loss of purpose.
Loss of purpose.
Identity crisis.
Yes, identity crisis. Who you were before you left no longer exists, or that spot's filled and you don't know where. Where's your place in society or in your church?
Loneliness.
Nobody understands me anymore. My whole life, my last 3 years, 10 years, whatever it's been, nobody can relate to it. I can't talk to anyone. Nobody understands.
Confusion?
Yep.
Unintentional rejection.
It's good. Others. What is it?
Frustration.
Yes.
Disconnected.
Uncertainty. Yes. Your friends and family and church family have been making money all along, and you get back and it's like, how do I live in this expensive culture, expensive area? And it's just like you're starting basically at ground zero and in some cases.
We have friends who have been back for a year now. She said, I think I'm over it now, but she said the sticker shock, they have 9 children, and she said, we could go out for supper and spend like $7 to feed us, and she said, now we're like taking people in batches to go eat because we can't do this.
It can be quite an adjustment. What else?
Affluence shock. Mm-hmm. Feeling like a kid in a candy store in Walmart. Like, you can't even buy anything because you can't get over the magnitude of choices.
Yes. Any others?
Not knowing how to navigate just practical aspects of life.
Yes. We had friends who lived in a country where they had like full service where people pumped their gas. And they hadn't pumped their gas in like 3 years. They got to the U.S. and it's like, man, what do I do? There's nobody around, and how do I even fill my car with gas? What else?
Wastefulness.
Yeah.
You see that wastefulness and you can almost like get angry or feel like this is wrong, and I want to reject it. I don't want anything to do with what I see.
Perceived apathy in the church.
Yes.
Consumerism.
Sometimes I just feel shy.
Go where you're in a culture and they're familiar. I mean, they're often using their horn just in friendly gesture to say, I'm here, and you get to the U.S. and you're constantly honking and they think you're a road rage.
Road rage because Americans get frustrated about things that the other culture was no big deal.
Yeah. Like, you can just jip in front of them and it's okay.
Yeah, we should. We could go on for an hour doing this, and it's fun to be able to realize that. Hey, the things that I've experienced, the things that I've, you know, in my head and my heart, is shared by all these people in the room. But you know, you're not unique. You're not weird. And sometimes it's just refreshing to know I'm not weird. I'm normal. So we're gonna go on. So.
If you want to have more of this kind of stuff, we'll talk about a retreat that we do at the end, but every summer we do a retreat, and we facilitate these kind of sessions where you're in a group and you get to just interact with each other and sort of work through these. Okay, another major part of returning well is dealing with grief and loss. So I think missionaries experience more loss than probably any other group of people. And other people don't understand that that's what you're experiencing. So when there's a death in the family, there's, you know, a viewing and a funeral and people send flowers and you have a lot of support for people if you lose a loved one in death. But the losses that missionaries experience are unrecognized by most, and you have to walk this path of loss alone. There's a songwriter named Jason Gray, and he wrote this song called Death Without a Funeral. And one little part of his song says, when there's nothing we can bury in the dirt, no place to lay the memory of all the things that were, no way to feel the closure, no ending to the hurt, it's a death without a funeral. And that feeling of loss and the grief that you experience when you're coming and returning is really a major part of your reentry experience. You might not even realize that that's what you're experiencing yourself, and for sure the other people don't. So because people don't know about it, you're not given permission to grieve. You might not be giving yourself permission to grieve. And the first step in the process of healing for grief is being able to just name your losses and acknowledge them. So just quickly call out, what are maybe some of the losses that you faced in returning?
Friendships.
Yes.
Loss of purpose.
Loss of purpose.
My motorbike.
Your motorbike. It doesn't matter how big or small the loss is, it is still a loss. That's wonderful.
Familiarity.
Pardon?
Familiarity.
Yes, the familiarity.
My flower gardens.
Mm-hmm. Flower gardens.
The way we did life as a family, and then come back and my husband goes to work and children go to school.
Yes. So loss of, and on the field maybe you had more time together, or he was coming and going at least, where now he's stuck in an 8-to-9 job and the children are off at school, family structure changes. Any other losses you can think of that you face?
Death of a vision.
Death of a vision. Especially those of you who have had to leave the field and come home for maybe an unknown reason to you or for a difficult reason, that is a huge loss to have to leave and come back. Denying our losses, denying our grief over our losses is counterproductive. We have to be able to recognize our losses, to name them, and to be able to process through them, because grief and loss doesn't just disappear and go away. That little quote that says time heals or something like that isn't actually true. If you're not actually working through and dealing with something, there can be a lot of time pass and you still are at the same place. Grief is not something we recover from. I love this quote. It says, grief is a process that helps us recover from the losses we experience. So we don't recover from grief. We recover from the losses, and grief, it's the process that helps us recover those losses. Grief helps us face our pain. It helps us grow in understanding and compassion and courage. It helps us move on. Grief is like the vehicle that moves us through our losses and on. So you need to give yourself permission to grieve. You need to give your children permission to grieve. And those of you who have walked through an actual death know that we grieve differently. Men and women grieve differently. Children grieve differently. And so it's okay. And you need to recognize that you're all walking through a grief journey. You all might be responding differently. A lot of times children respond in anger or just really, maybe depression or denial. And recognize that this is grief that you're dealing with, and talk about it. Name your losses, grieve them. at one of our retreats, one of the ladies said after our session on grief and loss, she said, I went out to the creek and I wrote all my losses on a paper, and she said, I just went out there and had my own little funeral and just buried them and gave them to God. And she said that she found that very helpful. So name your losses. Jesus died not just to save us. His blood doesn't just save us, but it heals us as well.
All right, so I just want to talk to you a little bit about the Heart Backpack. And missionaries are soldiers. They're, you know, called on. Oftentimes, they're some of the more resolute, determined people in our churches. And we send them to the mission field. And as a sort of a factor of their grit and determination and strength of character and personality and who they are, oftentimes they don't, either by nature of time or place or someone to share with, or by the fact that they don't take the time to step away and actually process. So we each have a heart backpack where we keep our memories, I keep our experiences. And in the U.S., where you have a strong support team, you more or less debrief just naturally. You don't even really think about the process. But missionaries who are isolated from each other, maybe have strained relationships and don't have places and people they can debrief within, the natural sort of human thing is to stuff it. I'm not going to deal with it now, later, and you just stuff it. So we have both good and bad experiences, both on the mission field that we go through, as well as during the reentry process. Dawn was talking about grief. Sometimes we have a loved one or someone die, either on the field or maybe it's someone at home that we can't get back to the funeral for. And, you know, we acknowledge the day, but then we just stuff it. And we don't take time to really process, really grieve, like Dawn was talking about. Maybe we have a journal that we write all our heart's deepest things into, but don't share it with anyone. We just stuff all those things. We have the joy of the birth of our child that we experience. We're thrilled, we're glad, but we don't have grandparents or family to share it with, so we just stuff that pain of what it is. Or maybe our child is really sick and we're sitting by their bedside praying and hoping that they don't, you know, die or worse, or die or are somehow impacted by it negatively. We also have medical. Maybe we're sick and we're struggling with our own health, and we just stuff it. We don't process and share it. And then we get that letter from our supporter, from our board, from somebody, you know, saying, hey, you know what, it's not working out, or you did something, made a decision we don't agree with, we're pulling our support, or we somehow criticize you for what you're doing. And again, you just stuff it. And what tends to happen is over time, you know, it's all banging around in our back, heart's backpack, and we haven't taken time to process it. And when we do pull it out, it's just this wad of who knows what, and it scares us, and we don't know what to do with it, so we just stuff it back in, and we have all this stuff. So debriefing is a part of unpacking your heart's backpack, taking that time to process, to bring it to the Lord, to allow for the Lord to comfort it, and be willing to have the courage to go through that process of unpacking your heart's backpack. And it's really important in that process of healing, finding freedom. If all that stuff's in your heart, you will not be able to go to a place of vitality and ministry again at home. It's going to hold you back and just drag you down till you get that out. So debriefing is part of having a safe place to share it and an opportunity to process our experiences. There's a little quote that says, the thoughts of the heart are untangled as they pass over lips and pencil tips. Part of speaking, sharing your story to someone who's safe, and part of writing down and journaling. And one of the things that we do in our debriefing is we ask the different people after they've processed their experiences is to create a storyboard. There's actually something sort of confusing, but sort of very therapeutic to create a story about your experience, a picture, draw a picture that represents your experience. And this is my storyboard for my first mission experience. And I just made it really simple because we don't have a lot of time to go through it. 5 minutes. All right, so I was excited to go. There's a lot of things that happened on the field that created confusion and questions in my heart. And until I came back, I wanted nothing to do with missions. So here's a picture, another picture. So you can do this. You can go out and find a picture, a path picture. It needs to be a path picture, something that represents your story. This is something that my wife, a few years back, this represented where she was in her life. And so there's different ways to define pictures, but the thing that we do is we bring all of our hurts, our joys, our pain, everything that we've experienced, we bring them to the Lord and give them, release it to the Lord. And they actually become stones in the altar where we worship God. They don't go away. They don't disappear out of our lives. We remember them. They're always there. But they become stones that become that place where we bring our reality, our humanness, our pain and our experiences and joys to the Lord. So this is just a little bit as far as our reflect and refresh. My wife mentioned this. This is our week in Ohio where we take missionaries, families, children, everybody through a debriefing experience to unpack their heart's backpack, give them opportunity to share. If you're interested more, my wife's email address is there, donjnolt@gmail.com. Or if you remember mine, it's my name, rodneynolt@gmail.com. We would love to have you come. And once you've had opportunity to unpack and to share and to heal, it's important that you get back to that place of getting back involved. Too often people just, that's it, not doing that again type of thing. But God is there. God can heal. God can bring us through it. So part of it is to get involved. Get involved with your communities. There's a lot of ministries here today. If you're at a place where you feel healed and ready to get involved, there's lots of different options here today you can check out. But it's important. There's lots of people, ethnic people, refugees, people in your community who need you, who need your experiences, who need your skills and God-given abilities. So please get involved as soon as it's part of that healing process is to learn to give again.
I don't think we have, how many minutes do we have? 1 minute? Okay, so I'm not going to go into this. How many of you know what TCK stands for? Okay, third culture kid, the ones of you that don't and have children, please talk to these other people or come find out. But your children grow up. Let's say America is full of circle people that are in the shape of circles. You move to Guatemala, and the people in Guatemala are the shape of squares. So when you move there, you adapt, and you sort of aren't really a circle anymore. You're not really a square. You become a triangle. What shape do you think your children are?
Triangles?
Nope.
Squares?
No. They're not circles because they're not Americans. They're not squares because they're not Guatemalan. They're not triangles because especially if they've been born in Guatemala, they are stars. They are a completely different shape, completely different culture. They are beautifully equipped to serve the world in a way that none of us are. They're their own culture. That's why if you have children, you meet up with a missionary who's serving in Africa and you're serving in Poland, your children connect just like this because they are a unique culture, all of their own. If you're parents, you need to learn and research. We do a whole session on that at our retreats as well. It is really something that TCKs really struggle if they don't understand who they are and why they are the way they are. So, yeah, we don't have time to do the burnout either. We're going to just have to skip through it.
I just mentioned this, that some people come back burned out. if that's you, there is help. There is places that you can go. There's another session later this afternoon on burnout. So don't stay at an unhealthy place. Seek the help you need to get healthy, and we'll turn it back over to the moderator.
Before he comes up, we have some papers on the back table there. We didn't print out a whole bunch because our experience is you get left with a lot of handouts. So you can just snap a picture of them. There are 10 copies of each. Information on our retreat, some information on reentry, and then also one on a list of resources of books, some websites, and things like that for you to get more information. So don't go away. Our moderator has something for you yet.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.